There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Before we get started with today's episode of Bench with Bubba, let me tell you about one of our sponsors, Draft. If you love fantasy baseball, then you need to try our new favorite app called Draft. It's daily fantasy baseball, but not like the other guys. On Draft, you play live snake drafts with other people just like in your season-long league. Drafts last just for one night. Once you're done drafting, that's it. No trades, no waiver wire. Just set it and forget it. And the best part? You play for cold, hard cash and get paid out the next day. Drafts start from just $1, so there's a draft for everyone. Trust me, I love playing drafts. I play golf, I play NFL, basketball. You can play them head-to-head, three-man, six-man. There's running leagues. You win one night, it keeps going for four, five, six nights. You can play a dream team. There's all kinds of great ways to play draft, and you can join me today. Just search Draft in your app store or play right from your computer on draft.com. And when you enter promo code SDSports, you got to enter the promo code SDSports. You get a free entry into a real money baseball draft when you make your first deposit, but you have to use the promo code SDSports. That's right. Playing a real money game for free just for using the promo code SDSports when you make your first deposit. Just again, search Draft in your app store or go to draft.com and enter the promo code SDSports. Now to this week's edition of Benched with Bubba. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 101. And tonight we have a special guest to talk a lot of pitching and fantasy baseball and some other important fantasy news. You can find him on Twitter at Spore, S-P-O-R-E-R. And yes, that means you might know this guy, Paul Spore from Fangraphs Sports. How are we doing, man?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good, good. Thanks for joining me. We talked real briefly before we got on, and for those that don't know Paul, well, I don't know why you wouldn't be listening to my podcast, but that would be a starter. But I wanted to say it on the podcast, your fireside chats, that's kind of how when you started following me was when I commented on those. And I want to say why I like them so much is you don't find a lot of podcasts where, A, you guys have a rapport together. That's very good. And, B, you have a rapport where you can challenge each other. Where a lot of shows like you listen to, everyone kind of like, oh, they fall in line together. That's yeah. How it goes. The way you guys can challenge each other is how people become smarter in this business and this industry and everything. And that's why I like it a lot.
And I really appreciate you saying that. I mean, that's how I engage with my friends. Like when we talk in sports, it can get heated, but it's not personal. Like, I mean, even so far as like definitely sometimes it'll be like, you'll say, oh, that's stupid, which, you know, you're calling them stupid or their point or whatever, but you're focused on their point. Like that's as far as it goes. You start getting into like personal attacks. You've gone down the wrong road here, but with sports, it's just like, it's supposed to be fun like that. I know, you know, we had the one that really went back and forth and a lot of people really liked it. There were some people that didn't. It was kind of it leaned more positive than not, though. So that was good. And that's what I wanted, because if we agree, we agree. That's fine. And doing shows with people that you're friends with, you're probably going to be more apt to have agreements and line things up. But sometimes you're going to have a disagreement. I think it's okay to kind of push and be like, hey, I disagree. You're not backing your point. Where are we at on it? Because that's sports. Like, that's the fun part of sports for me.
Yep, I 100% agree. Because in the end, sometimes certain issues, there is one right answer. But a lot of times there's not. Especially in the fantasy world we live in, where, you know, we'll go over some of your rankings you just came out with, and you know, you and Mason just went over them, and you guys don't agree on some things, and that's how everybody's system should work, and that's just the beauty of it all.
Because if there's only a set one to whatever, this game wouldn't be any fun if we knew the outcomes. I mean, that's why no matter how good the projection system is, they get tons of stuff wrong just by default, just because we can't predict exactly what these humans are going to do in a given year, and that's why we play. That's what makes it fun.
No, I completely agree. So let's talk about a few players here. Let's start with some recent player news. Real quick, some injuries. Evan Longoria is going to be out 6 to 8 weeks, having surgery on Tuesday. Got hit in the hand, broke a bone. The reason I wanted to ask you a question here is, what's your thoughts on Alan Hansen, who between him and Pablo will get most of the playing time over there?
Yeah, it sucks that this is the way it had to come to be for Alan Hansen to seemingly get a clear path to playing time, but I'm actually a pretty big fan of his. You know, he's a big prospect with Pittsburgh quite a while ago at this point, and so there's definitely the prospect fatigue, kind of the forgotten factor. But a 25-year-old, actually was kind of looking at him as a post-hype prospect back in November, wrote about him, and then again as an NFBC hitting sleeper. In mid-January, kind of identified him as somebody who projections liked. And then if you kind of take those projections over a full season, Alan Hansen can do some things because he has a little bit of the power and speed. And that's what really drew me to him, plus a multi-positional guy too. So I really like what Alan Hansen can do. And I think he's going to be somebody to kind of get in just about every format at this point as the playing time gets going now.
Yeah, I agree, because in reality, as a Giants fan, he should be playing over Joe Panic if you want the offensive angle. But the Giants have always been that defensive team. That's what they've always thrived on. They will always be that team. So this does open up big-time playing time. Like you mentioned, the multi-position, he can play the outfield. He can play so many spots that he's going to be one of those kind of super util guys that, say, Panda gets a start at third, we can still see Hansen in the lineup somewhere else. I saw about him half hour ago, Brandon Crawford's out the first three games this week on paternity leave. His wife's having a baby. So Alan Hansen could slide right in there, or Kelby Tomlinson or someone else. So tons of options with a guy like Alan Hansen. So don't go grab him in our TGFBI league, okay? Appreciate it. You got Fulte. Mike Fultonevich goes on the DL with right triceps tendonitis or tightness. He's supposed to be coming back already next week, and it's kind of already planned out in the rotation. And Brandon McCarthy's going to be the odd man out, but that's a whole other story. Are you concerned at all with Fulte? Because we could talk about him now if you want, but he, you know, had that great start so far this year that many don't want to believe in still.
No, and there is some trepidation. You mentioned the fireside chat. We actually discussed him. Nick Pollock and I from pitcherlist.com discussed Fulte and Newcomb and kind of came up, you know, liking both a bit, but not being super enamored with them, like respecting what they're doing, but not saying that they're locked down full on breakout seasons. Fulte's particularly interesting. What I like about both and Atlanta in general is I think the defense is really helping these guys. So you see some factors in the profile that you might not like that might not add up to the greatness that we've seen from Fulte, but then you add the layer of defense with it, and I think it helps it make a lot more sense. Not that he's going to be a 2.16 ERA full season, but he can add a run, you know, almost a run and a half and still be a viable pitcher if he's keeping the whip in check and getting the strikeout. So I like Fulte. This does concern me, though, an injury. Triceps, hopefully it's short timetable. If he comes back next week, that'll definitely make me feel a lot better. But anytime a pitcher's injuring their arm, you have to have some concern. It's balancing the panic with being properly concerned. So I put it on the scale as, you know, if it's a 1 to 10 panic, I say maybe like a 4. I got a little bit of concern, but I'm sticking with Fulte. Going to get him back in there as soon as I can. Might have to bench him this week just to play it safe, especially if every start matters, like a head to head. But generally speaking, I still like Fultonevich, and I'm pretty much, when healthy, starting him just about all the time without really any reservation, except maybe a Coors outing or a really difficult, maybe 2 start where I could finagle it. Because the beauty with somebody like Fulte is, where you got him. Some folks picked him up off the wire, I bet, in like a 10 teamer. Where you got him means your rotation is probably better around him, that you don't have to rely on him.
And then I'll just ask the questions now. We can skip him later. If he comes back healthy and everything's fine and you are a Fulte owner, are you going to keep riding this wave out, or are you trying to sell him as much as you can?
I think after this injury, you're going to have to wait, because that's going to build in a discount whether you like it or not. Somebody's going to say, listen, he's just coming off this injury, I'll trade for him, but the price has to come down, I think, with most trade partners. No, I don't really think I'm running out to sell him. You know, if he gets a couple good starts going right after this for Fulte, then maybe I'll run it up the flagpole and see what's what. But again, I think the way your team's probably constructed, in a lot of scenarios, he's probably not even somebody that you're overly reliant on. You know, he could be your third, fourth guy, which is a really nice third or fourth guy to have. So team needs absolutely matter, but for the most part, I'm not actively seeking to get rid of him as if I'm worried about a complete fall off for Fulte.
Okay. Let's go to the Oakland A's power hitting third baseman, Matt Chapman, who, great defender, hitting the ball well. His WAR numbers are through the roof right now. If you look at a whole season stat, someone tweeted out the other day. And he goes to the DL with the right thumb contusion. The only question I really have for you, because I think we're okay with him when he gets back, Franklin Barreto got the call. Every time he's been up, he never really gets the look.
Yeah.
Do you have any interest in a guy like Franklin Barreto?
You know, there's some prospect pedigree there, and so that kind of keeps me interested. You know, prospect pedigree is still a pretty good measure to use to kind of give you a guide as for guys who could do something. And he is still just 22 years old, Franklin Barreto is, so he's hardly somebody that we should be giving up on and saying, well, he can't do it. You're right, there's been some uninspired appearances so far in the majors, but at age 21, 22, not too worried about that. Has a little speed, a little pop. I do think I'm taking a look in the appropriate leagues, which would be AL only, of course, and then deep mixers. I'm thinking probably more than 15 teams, but the lowest I would go is a 15-teamer where I'm desperate for a middle. Maybe take a look at Barreto there.
Okay, I like that. Last question I'll ask you. Carlos Carrasco got hit yesterday with line drives going back to the DL. What's your level of concern with Carrasco? It's just insane.
Huge.
Yeah,
huge. He's a magnet for the ball. I think there's like a catalog of him. I remember the Ian Kinsler one as a big Tigers fan. You know, I was watching that game and I was like, oh, geez, are you kidding me? And it seems like he's always, it's almost like that softball pitcher who pitches it too low and gets a bunch coming back up at, up the box at him. It's like, get the ball up then. You know, obviously it's a lot different in MLB and it's probably just circumstance that this keeps happening, but he does keep getting hit by baseballs up the middle for Carrasco. I am concerned. He was just coming out of his little funk there statistically. So that's the really concerning part, is that he just had back-to-back excellent starts. Gets his clock cleaned here, now goes on the DL. I definitely have real concern here. The only problem is I don't think you can act on it. You just have to wait and see, because you're not going to get a full price or anything close to right now if you go try to trade Carrasco. So I think you just got to kind of take it on the chin and wait until he comes back.
Yeah, no, it's a tough one for sure. Let's go into some starting pitchers to maybe – we're going to start with the buy side of things. You know, some guys are – most of us were high on coming into the season. They've gotten off to some really rocky starts, either through injuries or just poor performances. And let's kick it off with a guy like Robbie Ray. You have him ranked, not even ranked.
Well, I don't rank injured guys, only because I just don't see a lot of value in it, because it's with injuries, timetables change. It's just so difficult. And it's so context dependent, even more so than everything else, that I just say punt them and wait till they come back. I do identify which tier I would put them in when they're back. And when Robbie Ray comes back, he's a must-start starter. He's somebody that you absolutely put in your lineup pretty much right away. Maybe not the first start off the DL, but otherwise you're putting him in. Even though I have concerns about him, he's too good and you paid too much to really try to finagle and bench him at times for Robbie Ray.
No, that answers that question. There we go. Let's talk about a guy, though, that's pretty polarizing. I've talked to a bunch of guys about him. I'm pretty sure I actually know you have talked to guys on your shows about him. Chris Archer, the guy, after a while, we're starting to see the same thing year after year after year. Mm-hmm. When do we I don't want to say stop believing he's going to be an ace, because he's still very good, but I don't think he's an ace. What's your thoughts on Chris Archer, and would you be trying to buy Chris Archer?
I'm not really trying to buy. I do like Chris Archer, you know, as a pitcher, and you know, he's done stuff on ESPN. Seems like a really cool dude, and I do think sometimes that can influence how we treat a player in the fantasy community too. Can work on the other side too. You think some guy's an a-hole, you kind of downplay what he's capable of too. And obviously, we should try to remove some of that. You want to take moral stands on guys who are like bad people off the field. I get it. But just being like a cocky jerk or whatever, don't let that negatively influence you. But also don't give a pass to somebody who you think is a cool dude. And I think right now that's what's happening with Archer, because the same problems keep cropping up. He doesn't have a third pitch and he can't get through starts beyond five, sometimes six innings. The third time through, when you don't have a third pitch, is becoming very problematic for Chris Archer, and it puts a lot of burden on the fastball slider combo, and the slider just hasn't been otherworldly this year. The fastball never really has, and so without an elite slider, he's got more of just a good one as opposed to an elite slider. We're left where we are right now with Chris Archer back in the low fours with a good strikeout rate, but that's about it. Not on a great team either, so you can't really feel comfortable about getting wins. No, I'm not going out and buying him, because I still think the price is high enough based on name value that I'd have to give something substantial, and I don't see a whole lot changing right now. I can't really put anything beyond like a 380 as kind of the upside right now until we see some sort of change where Archer can get through games longer or develop a third pitch that's really a weapon for him.
All right, question I have for you, because it was asked to me by our buddies, Bogman and the Welsh.
You talk to those,
Jake Arrieta? Yeah, once in a while I do. I have to represent Bogman and I. We share a lot of things like resemblance, so I have to appreciate that. but Chris Archer or Jake Arrieta?
Still think I'm going to go Archer because he gets strikeouts.
That's right. That's why I wanted to strike him, basically.
I'm just not with it with Arrieta. And, you know, I don't know how much of his disgruntledness affects him on the mound, but I think it probably does. You know, he was yelling at the shifts the other day, and he got smoked the other day, and there were four errors. I'm sure that sent him through the roof. Thankfully, only four of the eight runs counted against him. But, I was kind of out on Arrieta coming into the season, and I haven't seen anything that's changing my mind.
Yep, that's 100% agree with you on all of that. Let's talk Dallas Keuchel, a guy who used to be the ace of a staff. Now it's a staff with four other aces. And he's, you know, the strikeout rate's down this year to 18%. Ground balls are down. He's still 55% ground ball guy, but giving him more fly balls. Hard contacts, you know, the highest of his career, not by much, but a little bit. What are your thoughts on Dallas Keuchel? Because he looks completely lost out there.
Yeah, but I think we've seen him kind of look completely lost before, and it looked like guys were going to stop chasing his stuff, and he was going to kind of be done, and he meandered through that 2016 season. Always is good for like a DL stint or two as well. I think the team context really protects Keuchel here, to where I could still see myself possibly investing and steal some wins, steal some decent innings. I'm not expecting a rebirth back to 2017, though. I don't really see anything like that. So I'm in between. I'm not burying Keuchel, but I'm also not expecting a rebirth. So what I would say is, you know, we're at 415, 131 right now. Rest of season, I would probably pin him for something like a 390 ERA, but I could see the whip coming down. I do think that a lot of his skills are still there to shave some of that hit rate down, and maybe get down into the low 120s for a whip, which can be useful. So there's some value there, but with no strikeouts, that does put a lot of burden on winning games, going deep into games, and quality ratios. So the key of what Keuchel does is not really there anymore. So if people are asking full price or even really anything close, I'm passing. There has to be a real discount with Keuchel, or else I'm just not doing it.
No, I like that a lot, because I do agree that unlike Chris Archer and Arrieta, he shows – you know, much better in his good starts, I'd say, is the best way I can say it. But when he blows up, he blows up. So we'll see how it goes. But I do agree, we've seen it before with him. He's almost turning into that crafty lefty. That's
yep.
Not quite the Jamie Moyer of the world, but he's getting there.
And no doubt.
You can kind of see it. So definitely a good call there. Let's talk about a guy in the Arizona Diamondbacks, one that everybody thought would be one of the biggest benefactors of the Humidor coming into the season outside of the guy they got from Seattle now. Taiwan Walker, thank you. But he got hurt yet again.
Yeah.
That's what he does, RIP. But Zach Godley, he did have a really good start on over the weekend, given New York Mets. But all in all, strikeouts down, walks up. The curveball, still he's throwing it a lot, so that's not really the major factor unless I'm missing something, which I could be.
It actually
so what's
is.
Your thoughts on – oh, he is. Well, there you go. See, this is why I like what you have. You're a pitch mix expert.
It's a mess, though. He's still throwing it, but it's an absolute mess. That's the problem with Godley, is that his curveball isn't working to the same way. And I think there's a path that you could say – that the humidor is the reason why. One of the benefits of the humidor was to get better grip on your pitches and ideally get more break. Well, he almost has too much break. He's not throwing enough competitive curveballs right now. He's spiking it and guys are spitting on it and waiting for him to bring something back into the zone, which his other stuff is a little bit weaker. He doesn't have overpowering velocity and none of his other pitches are really standout pitches, I would say, for Zach Godley. That curveball is the money. And so it's almost a worse situation than something like Archer, where I said he has that one money pitch. It has to be money. The curveball has gone from super elite to just okay, and he does nothing to back it up, nor the velocity, to kind of cover him the way somebody like Archer does. So it really hasn't gone well. We saw a decent start in Colorado too. I did like that. He's going to be tweaking it. And so if we're seeing the curveball perform better and better, that's kind of be the thermometer for me. I'm going to keep an eye out and say, what are the results looking like with the curveball for Godley? It looks like they were pretty good in both of these last two starts. That's encouraging to me. I'd like to see if maybe he took some of that drop off, because his adding drop, I think, made it a less competitive pitch. And so he almost wants to dial it back just a little and then get back to the Godley that had that elite curveball. So he's somebody I would buy, because I do think there's a discount there too. The name value is not great and the numbers are wretched, but there is a path to improving, and it's with that curveball.
That's a really good point on the curveball there about the humidor actually having a negative effect, because all everybody's looking at right now is the home runs, that exactly. Factor of the humidor. And that's a great point, because I believe it was Eno wrote about it a long time ago, about how it's going to give you more stick, more spin, all that good stuff you're looking for, more better grip, like you're saying. So that would make a ton of sense if you adjust to it. Now you're getting a guy that will pitch better at home. Plus, he gets to go to San Francisco, gets to go to L.A., gets to go to San Diego. So that could be a sneaky one, because I know there are a lot of fed-up Godley owners out there.
For sure.
So it's a very
waiver wires in some leagues.
Yeah, that's bananas. Jeff Samardzija.
Pass.
He had a rehab assignment on Friday night. He only went three innings, but the Giants are finally getting smart with rehab and saying, okay, let's take it slow. Like, they love – it pains me, because as much as I love seeing – the regular starters come back and pitch, it's like, how about we get them back when they're ready?
Yes.
So he's they're taking it slow with him. I'm guessing another least one or two more starts. He's that guy that he shows so much good in a start and usually more bad in a start. It's like there's it's Jekyll and Hyde on the mound. What are Absolutely. Your thoughts on Joseph Margin?
White Cole Pineda is what I call him, because he's just like Michael Pineda. It's that same sort of deal where, you know, he doesn't want to walk anybody, but he just throws way too many strikes. And it's like, you cannot give in. Like, you don't have to pipe one on 3-1. You're good enough to just walk the guy and try to attack the next batter. And maybe you should do that. There is a point of diminishing returns with walk suppression. Now, this year it's been monstrous. I'm talking mostly about the previous two seasons. This year he's walking everybody, he's not striking out. No, like nothing's gone right. But that's more of like small sample injury, just kind of a nightmare, like I think 6 or 7 starts. So I'm talking more on the global scale with Samardzija, but I'm backing off here. You know, I don't see it, because even if he gets back to last year, that wasn't so good, because he allowed too many homers. And the strikeouts weren't even that great. It was like about a strikeout per inning. Like the total was great because he threw 208 innings, but the rate was 8.9 per nine. And it's just like, okay, that's fine. But I need more than that to cover the awful ERA. And there's usually good whip. So I think he'll be better than what we saw through 8 starts. I'm looking at it now. Samardzija has 8 starts on the season. I think he'll be better than that, but that's not saying much, because he's been so wretched. Not somebody I'm buying, via trade. If you have to speculate off the wire because you're in that desperate situation, I get it, because there's not a lot of a lot of great names on waiver wires to pass over somebody like Jeff Samardzija, who has had some quality work done. But as far as trading for him, no, I'm not giving up assets for Jeff Smarter right now.
And here's a question for you. I know it's difficult without like a specific younger player to mention, but say there's a Jeff Samar just sitting on your waiver wire, and then say Lou Sega for the Yankees is sitting there. Which one would you rather take?
Whew, I might go with Johnny Lasagna. I really think I might go with that. That's a tough one. That's a good heads up there. Now I'm still going to go Smarter, and that's what I'm saying. If you're picking him up off the wire, you see a guy like that who's done a hell of a lot more. I'm gonna still lean toward the track record and the talent over somebody like Johnny Lasagna, Johnny Lois Saiga. His nickname's Johnny Lasagna, which is hilarious.
Oh, I think it's perfect.
I'm gonna lean Shark there because part of it, I'll cop to it, is just not knowing a whole lot about Lois Saiga. So, you know, maybe he's a lot better than I think, but the stuff I read this week and heard from prospect guys like James Anderson at RotoWire says that he's like solid, but not some game changing prospect. He's going to have his ups and downs. I'd rather take, like, for example, his teammate, Domingo Germain, who's probably on the waiver wire in a lot of leagues too. I'd rather go with him. I'd go Herman, Samardzija, Lois Saiga right now. If he's on a waiver wire, like a 10 or 12 teamer.
Here's one for you because he's also injured but coming back shortly. Joey Lucchesi.
Dude, I like Lucchesi. Things that he did was pretty impressive this year. The what he's been able to do with kind of his deception and his curv, his little changeup curveball hybrid. Yeah, I like Lucchesi. I think he would jump to the top of that theoretical list that I'm talking about here. So, yeah, I would go with him coming back. His rehab's been sharp. And, I'll go with Lucchesi.
All right, let's talk about Minnesota Twins pitcher Lance Lynn. His strikeouts are going up pretty good clip this year. Walks are going up as well. Going up a ton of hard contact, 40% hard contact rate. And we're finding out year after year now that Target Field actually is a nice hitter's park in the summertime. So there might be some concern there, but the strikeouts are very impressive. He's been better of late. Maybe, late start to the season, all the storylines you can look at. What are your thoughts on Lance Lynn?
Got some love for Lance Lynn. I kind of always have. And so maybe it's just having a tough time quitting somebody that I think is a really quality pitcher. He's been really sharp over his last five straight quality starts, 30 strikeouts and 30 in the third. That hard contact is still there. Now, I want to credit, and I can't remember, so pardon me on that. This is not my original thing, though. Somebody was looking up and seeing that there's a lot of hard contact measurements looking really high kind of across the board, and that maybe there's something a little bit flawed by it because it just seems like there's this weird influx of hard contact kind of across the board. I mean, I know last year there were some questions about Comerica Park being inflated, but now there's some questions about just kind of across the board. And so it matters to look at the hard contact rate, but it's not something that's an automatic deterrent for me too, because he's also got a 54% ground ball rate in this run. Lance Lynn does. And so hard grounders don't necessarily bother me. Sometimes they're going to skip through the infield. Sure. But it's better than being a hard contact fly ball sort of guy, because then you're talking about leaving the yard. I'd rather give up some singles than just get beat around the yard or get beat, out of the yard with home runs. So I'm actually kind of in on Lance Lynn. I think he's going to have a nice summer of just kind of piling up quality starts. It's a lot of them will be baseline quality starts, 6-3, but I'll take it with solid strikeouts. And I think this Minnesota team will play better, so I think there'll be an opportunity for some better win totals too.
Yeah, and we knew that going into the year. What Lance Lynn has been his whole career is a quality starts pitcher. Mm-hmm. He's never been flashy, but he's always been good. If he gets to you that, then yes, definitely on board. That's a good point with the hard hit. Doesn't always mean fly balls. It could be ground balls, which it is more so in Lance's case. Last guy about on the buy list here. This is ultra tilting to me because I was big on him this year and I have him in places and I've had to drop him in one league, the Barf League. John Gray, he got beat up again today. He had four great innings and then the fifth inning, boom, goes to dynamite. Yeah. So what are we doing with this guy? Because the stuff is there. It's just, he has that inning or two where it all goes bad.
That's the thing. And, one of the issues that I see in particular with John Gray is that the issues that he has are exacerbated by his home park. And so, you know, the fact that he runs a high BABIP, well, that's because he plays in a park that's conducive to doing such as well. And so it makes it so he has to be perfect at on the road, and he's not, because then there's no wiggle room at home for John Gray, and you're just left, you know, we've talked about him a couple times already. Nick Pollock, my colleague on the Fireside Chats, he really said it best with regards to John Gray, because he says, even if he has a great start one day, we're so worried about the next one that the stress level itself is so not worth it. And that's kind of where I'm at with Gray right now. You know, as much as I like the talent, I think somebody asked me, like, when's Gray going to turn it around on Twitter today? I said, when he gets traded. I don't think he's going to get traded. Right? They should keep him. But for fantasy, I think it's not until he's out of that environment. I just can't do it. It's a headache I just don't want.
No, that's a great point. And that's why I finally ended up dropping him, is I realized I haven't played him in like his last four starts. Like, yeah. Then why am I rostering you?
So you can't pitch well you, not have
you gotta go. I'll go take a chance on someone else and see how that goes. Let's talk about some potential sell targets or just hold as you'd expect. Patrick Corbin comes in 18th on your list. He's been really, really good. Came out the year as like a gangbuster, then kind of had some interesting velocity, some would say issues. And he got beat up over the weekend by the Mets, which is concerning. But the stuff still looks good. What's your thoughts on Patrick Corbin? Are you selling him or are you watching it?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to take it out. You know, such a bad one against the Mets. And actually, the Mets and Pirates both got to him. A bad inning against both of them. And that really sank his day. But he still had 12 strikeouts and 11 in the third innings there. Strikeouts have still been there. Now you look at it and – three of his last four outings have been 5+ earned runs. And so that's really difficult to take. But I think that's just kind of some smoothing out. You know, the John Smoltz says that a guy's going to have, you know, his A+ stuff for 10 starts. He's going to have virtually nothing for 10 starts. And then the middle 10 are really going to kind of decide their season, right? And so he got off to an amazing start through 11 starts. Most of those 11 were probably some of the best games that Corbin's going to throw all year. And now he's having some of his off outings, and we're going to kind of see where it shakes out. Did anybody really think he was going to maintain a sub-3 ERA, a 2.5 sort of ERA? I didn't. And so we talk about, you know, things evening out and having some bad luck go against them, throw some bad outings to kind of get the ERA to a more reasonable spot. I see a 3.48 right now, and I think he could kind of maintain that the rest of the year. I could be open to trading Corbin. I do think with the scenario right now, though, you're going to take a big hit on that return. So it's a matter of, is it worth it to you to take the hit? If you need something, yes, your team, you'll understand that context better. But if you're just trying to maximize value, now is not the time to deal Corbin. You missed your window, and you're going to have to wait for another one.
No, that's a great point. Missed your window completely. Let's talk about Kate Upton's favorite baseball player, Rick Porcello. He's been a really interesting guy to watch this year because he never looks dominating, but you look at the end of the game box score, and it's almost, I think Matt Modica tweeted it out one day. It was almost like identical start after start after start. It was really crazy looking at it, and he's on a great team with the Red Sox. You have him ranked 53rd. What's your thoughts on Porcello?
He's a Cy Young thief, so he should be banished to probably prison. I mean, I don't know if that's too hard. It's probably not harsh enough because can't go around stealing Cy Youngs. you know, I have a hard time with Rick Porcello. I watched him kind of come up through the system with the Tigers and pitch, and always felt that he was better than what we were seeing. And he'd be frustrating because he would have that one bad inning, usually like the sixth inning, you know, kind of when you're getting deeper into the games. And then he kind of emerged with Boston in that second year and won a Cy Young and then bounced right back. And I think the bottom line is that he's more of a 380 to 420 type of pitcher. And it's just kind of which side you're going to be on. Obviously everything went his way in 2016 for Porcello. We're at 370 right now after a great start. I think he kind of leveled out to where he's at now. And you kind of live in that 370 to 420 range, which, you know, might feel like a big difference because you're moving from the threes to the fours, but that range is very similar type of pitcher. So he's a solid guy. He is an innings guy, so that his strikeout rate, even though it's under one per inning, you're getting volume. And so I think that there's value in that. He's a fine pitcher, but he's definitely not someone I'm bending over backwards to get. Maybe I should have him a little bit higher, but I kind of put him at the top end of the spot starting tier. Most teams probably won't be able to spot him. You know, it's a spot start between your roster and reserve. It's not a spot start where you would cut Rick Porcello. I probably think with the way injuries have piled up now, he's probably more of a usually start where you're just kind of putting him in, unless there's a really bad, like, home and home against the Yankees, you know, in Yankee Stadium on Monday, in Fenway against them on Sunday or something like that. But otherwise, you basically just have to start Porcello all the time.
That sounds big. You'll have him ranked ahead of this guy. But I'm going to ask you anyways, and you do have him ranked ahead of that guy. You obviously know that. But for rest of season, based on what you – if we didn't put names ahead of that description and one you gave earlier, you have a lot of similarities there. Lance Lynn or Rick Porcello?
Exactly. No, you're exactly right that there's a lot of similarities there. And I don't have Lynn as high, but I have them in the same tier right now. And so that's part of I don't. I have Lynn in the deep league spot starting tier. So he's a good bit behind right now, but then he's also put up a couple more good starts since that posting, and I'll be bumping him up anyway. Yeah, that's honestly, I'm going to still go with Porcello because of the team and the fact that he's not walking the yard the way that Lynn has at times. So I'm still going to lean Porcello. But if you are looking, if you know, Porcello not available on waiver wires, if you're looking for poor man's Porcello, scoop you a Lance Lynn off the wire.
I like it.
We take this brief break from Benched with Bubba to talk to you about RotoWear. It's one of the best quality shirts in the industry. When I mean industry, all the clothing industry, the fantasy sports industry, because people are rocking it. They're loving it. You're seeing it in a lot of big outlets now. No other brand can compete with RotoWear in terms of quality. They're premium blend fabric, super soft, comfortable, athletic fit shirts. They specialize with a special printing process. The design is part of the shirt. Literally, it is dyed and bleached into the fabric, no thick ink. There's over 30 different designs right now. It's just crazy all the stuff they have coming out, and there's more and more stuff every time you turn your head. They have fantasy football, baseball, hockey, basketball, some really cool DFS ones, but everything's great. They have men's, women's, and kids. Check them all out. Go to rotowear.com, rotowear.com. Check them out on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, at RotoWear. But the cool part, guys, if you use the promo code DEGENS, DEGENS, you get 20% off your order. Again, promo code DEGENS, DEGENS. Check their site out. Check them Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. They're always giving away free shirts. And then when you go to purchase the ones you want for you, your loved ones, your friends, your family, whatever, use promo code DEGENS, DEGENS, for 20% off your order. Now back to this week's episode of Benched with Bubba.
Mike Mikolas, he has an 80 grade stash and Miles. He's getting it done. Miles. Why did I call him
Mike? Fantastic stash.
Outstanding. And he eats lizards. So what can you not like about this guy? And he doesn't walk anybody. So what are your thoughts on Miles Mikolas? Is he's not, you know, setting your strikeout records on fire for you, but he's putting together solid outing after solid outing.
He really is. I mean, that's the thing. You kind of build around that, especially if you drafted him. You didn't come in expecting that there was going to be a lot of strikeouts for him, or you shouldn't have. There was nothing to suggest that there was going to be for Mikolas. But you take that excellent whip and ERA too. And of course, he's been going deep in the game. So he's been piling up wins on a solid St. Louis team. They're not elite, but he's been solid. But they've been solid. And so he's piling up the wins. I like Miles Mikolas. I'm fully in here. I see no reason to kind of run from him. I also don't think that there's a lot of equity in the market anyway. I don't think you're going to go and really pull down a big haul. And you drafted him so late, you know, might as well ride it out, like, and kind of see where it's at, because there could be a lot of give back. I don't think there's necessarily going to be, by the way. The advanced metrics don't say that he's going to fall apart. But even if you got to a bottom line of a 350 ERA, which would be a run higher than he's at right now, you'd be pretty darn happy with that. Now, if you sold right now, you'd miss all the bad stuff. But again, you're not going to get enough to make it worthwhile. And I don't rule out the possibility that he, you know, control and commands himself to a sub 3 ERA for the full year for Mikolas. Like, he's been that good. He's been that sharp. Watch him pitch. You'll be very impressed compared to what you might, the preconceived notions that you might have based on the profile.
No, I agree. He's something special. He's a craftsman out there. And he definitely is like a Houdini, not just the mustache aside. So he's getting it done. Looks really, really good. Let's talk about his teammate, Michael Wacha, who has peripheral number-wise look great. When you dig in deeper, strikeouts down a bit, walks are up, hard hit rates over 40%. You get a Sierra, it's like a 4.4. So one would suggest regression coming, and it could come a little harder than you'd like, but sometimes it doesn't always happen. So what are your thoughts on Michael Walker?
Yeah, and he took a big step, you know, toward any regression that he was going to have with his most recent outing, where the Cubs just annihilated him. 9 runs, 8 of them earned in 4 innings, 3 homers there. So, you know, that, again, that's a big step in kind of what you were expecting to maybe fall back toward. I still see him as a mid-3s ERA sort of guy. I think there is good stuff with Michael Walker. I've been kind of a long-term believer. I think he has the stuff to be a really successful sort of mid-3s ERA type of guy. Again, getting nice wins on that team. Just because you can't always perfectly plan for wins doesn't mean you can't set yourself up in better situations. And being on a team like the Cardinals, which is a quality team, is a good situation. They have some good bullpen pieces. I think they'll try to fortify their bullpen as well. Jordan Hicks is coming along, so you feel like it's okay turning over to the bullpen better than you did when Greg Holland was in that bullpen, at least. So I like Waka. I might actually go and see about buying right now because of that horrific start. Somebody's like, oh, I missed my window. No one's going to give me anything. You go in there with a little something less than you would have given 5 days ago, and you might be able to get it done because I think people want to get out from under. Just as long as you're planning for like a 350 to 380 the rest of the year, you're fine. Don't put yourself in a headspace where you're expecting major things out of Walker. You're just expecting a quality rotation guy to be one of your top 4 starters, and you'll be good.
Porcello or Walker?
Walker.
Okay.
Did I rank it that way? I think I did. Is that consistent with
me? Yeah, he did. Yeah, he did. Yeah, 42, 53. Yeah. Let's talk about some of the fun names here. Some of the kids or other guys that came out of nowhere that some are wanting to run and get acquired from someone, or you could sell for a pretty penny and not look back. And one of them is Caleb Smith, a lefty out of Miami. He's been outstanding this year, striking out at the farm, ERA in the 3.7s. Pitches in a pitcher's ballpark on a bad team, though. So what are your thoughts on Caleb Smith? Would you look to buy, sell, or just kind of walk away?
Yeah, you know, I've actually got him in a couple leagues, and I'm fine with it. I'm hanging on. But it's not enough to really run out and get. First off, terrible team context, which, you know, it's not the only – I've been bringing it up for different guys because it can be kind of a tiebreaker or a little bit of a sweetener on top. Yeah, I think it's a bigger factor than it's sometimes given credit for. And being on Miami, it's just a bad situation. So I think, you know, a lot of things can go sideways there. I believe in a good bit of what he's doing. He's got a 3.75 ERA right now, 1.19 whip. I can see the whip creeping up a little bit more, maybe say 1.125 plus with that ERA and strikeouts. That's not a bad rotation filler. Your 5th, your 6th, 7th starter, that's fine. But don't go buying it. There's not a dominant pitch. Nick and I talked about him recently on a fireside chat and kind of came to the conclusion that, hey, it's fine riding it out. There's some quality stuff here, but it's not game changing. And it's more likely to go up than down in terms of the ERA and whip. So just kind of stick with it. And, you know, if it gets too bad, if there's, you know, 3 out of 4 bad starts or 3 in a row, that's the kind of guy you just cut at that point. You take what you got and you just move on. So no, I'm keeping it's a start to start thing with Caleb Smith.
Okay. Let's talk about Eduardo Rodriguez. This is a guy that I've been high on a lot, but it's always been like a walk issue with Rodriguez. His strikeouts are always there. In his last, you know, I'd say month and a half, the walks for the most part have been quite controlled. 6 innings today with 2 earned, 1 walk, 9 strikeouts. Again, if you want to talk team concept, phenomenal team to play on. We've already established that with the Red Sox. But the walks are down this year, hard contacts down. What's your thoughts on Eduardo Rodriguez?
He looks great. And honestly, the only real concern with Eduardo Rodriguez is the health. And because it's been chronic lower half injuries with the knee, that's the only thing I ever worry about. Another guy that we did talk about on the podcast on the Fireside Chat with Nick. He really likes him. And I just, you know, the only thing I brought up was we just got to be leery of that health. But I also am the guy who says when the skills are in check and health is kind of your biggest concern, I'm still willing to bet on that because we don't, you know, we're not so sophisticated to know that guys are going to get hurt. The reason that he's a little bit different than some of those cases, though, is when it's a chronic injury, it's the best predictor of future injuries. If it's kind of a mishmash of different things, unrelated things, unlucky things like Carlos Carrasco, I would say that there's not any super enhanced concern versus others. When it's somebody like Rodriguez who always having the knee issue, I think there is a little bit more concern. That said, skill's too good to bypass. I'm investing and I'm even open to buying him and taking on that injury risk because the upside's so high.
That's where I'm at. I'm looking to acquire him wherever I can. I'm kind of mad that I sat there and watched him for a week or two and then he got snapped up everywhere. So that was a tough one because he got drafted in most leagues, but some people, when he was still injured, dropped him and you had your chance.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk Marco Gonzalez of the Seattle Mariners, another mm-hmm. lefty who, you know, I kept watching and watching and watching. I finally grabbed him in a couple leagues, but I was always hesitant because he didn't seem to be like that overpowering guy. He doesn't strike out a ton, but his K rate's up to 21% now, which is pretty good. And then all his peripherals, FIPs, XFIPs, Sierras, hard contact that works, look really, really good. So what's your thoughts on Marco Gonzalez? Because there's starts I watch him and I get really concerned just because he looks so hittable.
He does look hittable. Marco Gonzalez, I liked him as a prospect. I remember writing him up in some starting pitching guides back when he was a prospect with the Cardinals. He looked like kind of a ready-made guy who was going to come up from the minors out of college pretty quickly. And I think he did make it to the majors pretty quickly after being drafted, but then injuries have really, you know, beset him and pushed him back to the point where just now he's finally starting to emerge. That was in 2014 that he debuted. He put 35 innings that year, just 3 major league innings in 15, none in 16, and then 40 very forgettable innings last year. And now this year, really starting to show some things. This is somebody where, you know, the pedigree. I mentioned it with Hanson, having prospect pedigree and Barreto, that keeps you in on a guy like this just to say, hey, there was a reason he was drafted. And there's a reason that he sucked too. It's been health. It's not like he just hasn't had any skill. Like you can not wash it away, but you can explain the awfulness of Marco Gonzalez that his health just hasn't been there. And I think it's fair to say, okay, don't judge him off of that. Count it, be mindful that he's an injury risk, but do not run away from him because of it. And now we're seeing some really solid skills. I think he's another one of these guys that's kind of a high threes with a mid 1-2s sort of whip. Very useful. This team has been amazing. The Mariners have been so impressive that they're going to put Marco Gonzalez in a lot of positions for wins too. So, you know, in that same sort of tier with a lot of guys that we've been talking about, not someone I'd necessarily chase via trade, but if I have him, I'm not overly anxious that he's going to tank on me.
All right. I think I know the answer here again, but I'm going to ask you just because to me, if I watched both of them pitch side by side, I'd see a lot of resemblances, but you have a pedigree with one and not with the other. Would you still rather have Dallas Keuchel or would you rather gamble on Marco Gonzalez?
That's another good one. You're good at this. Yeah, I think I'm still going to lean on Keuchel because I think he's operated with – they are very similar skill sets, and he's maximized it before – I think he understands how to best utilize that same skill set of, you know, low velocity, contact management, get chases out of the zone. I think they're more likely to kind of meet in the middle right now where Keuchel comes back to it and Marcos kind of moves towards him. So, yeah, let me get Keuchel there, but that's, again – on the wire, there's not going to be any Keuchels. If you want a poor man's Keuchel, you go get yourself a Marco Gonzalez.
Yeah, or if they're both owned in a 15-teamer, go trade for Marco. Save some
exactly.
Save some collateral.
Save some name value there for sure because you're going to get him cheaper and you're probably going to approximate damn near the same thing, if not better. Again, there's still a scenario where Marco Gonzalez is better than Keuchel, but if I'm betting on the two straight up, I'll take Keuchel by a shred.
We already talked about 180 grade stash. Well, here's another one for you. Daniel Mengden. This guy is so much fun to watch. He's just like the complete character. Him and Mikolas, they must be like brothers from another mother. So
absolutely. I was calling crazy. Him AL Mikolas for most of the year. And then obviously he had a rough week this week drawing the Angels and Astros. But yeah, I'm with you on Mengden there. The mustache is too great and he works with command and control. You know, again, this was a brutal week. And I think people knew it was coming in, though. There was fantasy advice out there saying sit him. If you have him, sit him. If you can only cut in like a 10 or 12 teamer, you don't really have a reserve, as some leagues are, then cut him. You don't want these two starts. And that worked out. It boosted his ERA back up all the way to 4.06. That said, he's past that now. And if you were able to weather that on your bench, I'm not completely running away, but I think he's kind of where he belongs now, and he's going to meander between 380 and 430. And the problem is no Ks, like none.
Yes.
And not the same whip. So he's a little bit more of a poor man's Mikolas, but there's some value there. Your team, it has to be team specific though. You have to have your Ks on lock and you're really chasing ratios. If that's where you're at, and it's specifically whip, then go ahead and get Mengden. Anything else where you need Ks or even ERA, I don't think he's the one for you.
That's a great point, because he's not a strikeout guy by any means. The best thing I could say about Mengden, and it's basically what you were saying, he, like Mikolas, you can start every start pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
Mengden, it's so start specific. Like you said, this week, even though there's a two starter, I said it with Alex Cobb earlier, not on this podcast, but this week when he got shelled, that no two pitch starters are built equally. They don't just, exactly. You don't automatically start them because there are two. Then there are people that think that way. Oh, wait, no. I have two starts this week. He's in the lineup.
Agreed. Especially in points. Yeah. Like, what's points? He'll accumulate some points. No, he could get you minus points.
Yes.
Like that, your scale goes below zero.
Yes, there is a negative in this situation. So Mengden, really, really good pitcher, young pitcher, spot start type stuff.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's usually a rule too that if you can't use a guy in a two start, you should cut him. I did make an exception for Mengden, and I kept him in a league where I didn't start him, and I started him in another, by the way, because I had no other options, but that's neither here nor there. But yeah, usually it's saying if you can't start somebody in a two start, you should cut him. I made the exception with Mengden, so we'll see if he can get back on track after a very rough draw.
Yeah, I think he will. Good ballpark there. Let's talk about a pitcher you have ranked 25th overall, and he's earned every bit of that, could be higher for some people. Ross Stripling's been outstanding for the Dodgers. He's, in theory, saving them and keeping them in the race. He has been amazing. But the question I have for you is, I'm assuming you just want to ride this out, but my concern is innings. He has not gone deep in his career. He's been a reliever a lot or just kind of injured or in the minors. What's your thoughts on Stripling the rest of the way?
That's a valid concern, right? I think he threw 77 total innings last year, like 106, looks like 120 the year before that. However, he's out of the injury nexus as a 28-year-old, so I don't think he's somebody that they have to fully baby. And you know, I think they can push it a little bit, especially because they might simply have to. They might not have the luxury. I know they get guys back all the time, but it seems like one comes back, one goes on the DL in his place. So I really like what Stripling's doing. Is he going to keep a 176, 101 ERA whip combo? No, of course not. We all know that. But what's he going to go to? And I think the rest of the year you could expect more of like a 320, 115 sort of guy with good strikeouts, very useful on a quality team. The way, you know, I keep mentioning Nick. Apparently we're best friends. But he has a great term. It's called getting Sullivaned. When you want to write about somebody and you go to realize that Jeff Sullivan's already written about him. And I got super Sullivaned on Stripling because we had talked about him on the pod and I just watched three starts and I was zeroing in on just how amazing this breaking ball was and how deceptive it was in comparison to his fastball. And it's literally exactly the thrust, as it should be, of Jeff's piece on him. And Jeff did it better than I could have anyway, so it was totally fine. But I definitely got Sullivan there with Stripling. I recommend it. Just go to Ross Stripling's Fangraphs page. It'll be the first article up there, just under his biographical information. You can see the most recent five articles. And actually, it'll be second because he was mentioned in another pod. But go read that. If you're worried about Stripling, you're wondering, like, well, how is he so good? Like, who is this guy? Go watch that. Go read that and watch those GIFs. You'll see how deceptive, how difficult he is to differentiate between the fastball and curveball, and that's why he's been so dang good. I don't worry too much about the innings, though. They might space him out a little bit, skip him here and there, but I think they can extract, you know, upwards of another. I don't think they have to take him out, by the way. I think they can just push it and say if he ends up with 150 innings, that's fine. You know, so I don't think that's somebody that they have to just put on the shelf for a couple weeks to save innings with Ross Stripling.
Now, his name is red hot right now. Would you be looking to deal him?
Yeah, I'd definitely be open to that because I do think you can really get something going in the market there. You know, not a super high profile guy, but he was a prospect of some note, but he's on a great team. He's been so excellent. I do think the numbers kind of speak for themselves. And even if you're, you know, I'm always kind of forward in a trade talk and I'm open to saying like, listen, I'm looking to trade this guy. I know he's not going to say a 176. I'm not asking you for somebody of a 176 ERA caliber, but I want something substantial. This guy's going to be a really good pitcher, I think. So don't try to beat around the bush and you know, dupe an owner into thinking that they're buying a sub two ERA pitcher. They're not stupid. They know they're not. But if you're just kind of forward and say, listen, you need a three something low threes ERA pitcher, I got one for you, and he's a damn fine one. So I am open to dealing Stripling because I do think you can get a big bat in return. And that should be something you should entertain if your pitching is on lock and you need some hitting.
All right. Two more names I want to get to here. Two names I have a time trying to click the add button on. First will be Dylan Covey of the Chicago White Sox, who has just been sneaky good start after start after start. I'm waiting for the blow up, and it's just not happening. What are you seeing with Dylan Covey?
Yeah, Dylan Covey's been really interesting. Now, here again, a prospect of some acclaim. He was a first-round pick, I believe. Okay, I think he was a first-round pick, then went to school because he had diabetes, right? Yeah, and then got redrafted in the fourth. I think that's his path, and I think that was Dylan Covey. Yeah, first round by the Milwaukee Brewers in 2010. Then he was diagnosed with diabetes, decided he wanted to go to school and kind of deal with that at school. So he went to San Diego, got redrafted in the fourth round. So there is some pedigree here. He is 26 years old. I think that what we're seeing here is some viability, really leaning into a fastball-slider combo. And it's kind of suiting him pretty well. And he also has a split finger. I'm a sucker for split fingers. I just really like it. He doesn't overly rely on it. The strikeouts aren't going to be huge. They aren't already, and he doesn't miss a ton of bats. But I think we could get some quality starts here. He's a spot starter for sure in mixed leagues, Dylan Covey is. But he's, again, one of those that you spot start between your roster and the reserve as opposed to cutting him after you utilize him. So I think maybe Don Cooper, you know, he hasn't had a win as a pitching coach lately. Maybe this is one for him with Dylan Covey because I do think there's some viability there. But heed that 130 whip. When you see a 229 ERA and a 130 whip, that's a mix that doesn't work. And generally when the whip is that much higher, that's telling you that ERA is going to creep up. I think you're buying a four ERA guy, but in a lot of leagues, plucking a four ERA guy off the wire still has a lot of value.
Yeah, and he's got a 333 BABIP. Do you see that maybe coming down?
I think that it could come down a little bit. I think it's probably about where it should be, though, because even if it kind of comes down to, you know, 320, 315, that's definitely a drop, but I don't think it would drastically change his outlook. He doesn't allow a ton of hard contact, though. There's a lot of ground ball contact, though, and ground ball guys tend to have higher BABIPs. That said, Covey is in 61%, and once you start to get in that 60-plus percent range, then the ground ball becomes an asset. Because you're dealing with contact management. I don't know how good Tim Anderson and Yoel Moncada and Matt Davidson are on the infield for them. So I don't know if that defense is aiding what he's doing with that big ground ball rate. But if they are, then it's Carlos Sanchez. Matt Davidson's DH. But either way, Yoelmer Sanchez. They're quality defensively, then yeah, I think it could come down and then bring that whip down. But as it stands right now, I feel like I'm buying a 4 ERA 125 whip. I'll say that the whip comes down a little bit. I think that's what I'm buying. Your league where that's useful, go ahead and scoop him.
Daniel Mengden or Dylan Covey?
I'll go Mengden. I think I've seen more quality from him. You're really good at this because that's another close one. Yeah, I'm gonna go Mengden barely.
Okay. Last name I want to bring up here, and it makes a lot of Boston Red Sox fans want to vomit, and just baseball fans in general at the time, but Clay Buchholz has found himself at the moment in Arizona. They signed him to a minor league deal. He's been pitching 5 2/3 today, one earned.
Yep.
He's not striking out the world, but he's putting it together right now on the season at 2.94 ERA. Obvious regression coming there, at least one would think. Are you going to ride this out, or are you still staying far, far away?
I can't stand Cletus. I've never been a Clay Buchholz fan. He looks like Cletus from The Simpsons.
Yep.
I'm just so not a fan. But again, let's be consistent. I just said, just because you don't like a dude, and it's sports hate, by the way. I don't know I think he had like one run in off the field ages ago when he was young, but I don't think he's like some, you know, garbage human or anything like that. I just like to sports hate him. I don't know. Like, again, he chalk one up for the humidor. His cutter's been working really well. I think there is some viability. But again, I think it's the Covey sort of deal. If you're okay buying a four ERA 120, and that's what you kind of need, then fine. You're not buying a 321 104, which is what Buchholz is at right now. And if you're comfortable with that, then all systems go. And you might get something better than that, but go in thinking I'm buying a four ERA and a 120. Yeah, we'll go 120 whip because he's not walking anybody. And then work from that. And that decides whether or not you want to buy Buchholz.
Okay. Yeah. I think, and if you do buy them, go get some Pepto, maybe buy some stock in it, whatever works for you, because you're going to need that. So just to take that in advance. Just
don't watch them when you put them on your team.
Yeah. There are some guys do not watch at all. It's a very, very good point. So, yeah, don't do it. But Paul, that wraps us up, man. I appreciate it. I could sit here and talk with you all day, but you're a busy, busy man, and we don't need to do it all day. We can do it some other time.
Hey, would love to be back on. Thank you so much for having me on. It was a lot of fun. Got to talk a lot of pitchers, and now we'll get to do the fireside chat here in a little bit, so people can do a double dose of. I don't know when you release this, but Sunday night could be a double dose of Paul Spohr if somebody's so inclined to make that terrible decision.
It'll be dropping on their feeds later this evening, so they can definitely go check it out and go check him out on Twitter at Spohr SPORER. And he, do you want to talk about your Twitch real quick and let everybody know what they can do with you there?
Oh, yeah. I stream on Twitch, twitch.tv/pspor24. For those that don't know what it is, it's a video streaming platform focused around video games where I play MLB The Show and interact with my chat, talking about baseball, pretty much baseball all the time. You know, we take questions in there. We talk about fantasy. We talk about, quote unquote, real baseball. And it's not always baseball. Sometimes we veer off talking about other stuff. It's a lot of fun, though. And I know what some of you are thinking. I'm going to watch this guy play video games. That's everybody's reaction. Then they come out and they see what it's about. I felt that way. I was like, oh, I'm going to watch some dude play video games. Okay. Then I started doing it. I absolutely love it. It's a lot of fun. Give it a shot. You still might not like it, but drop the preconceived notions and at least give it a shot. It's basically my Friday chats from Fangraphs, but in video form while I also play a video game.
The way I've explained it to people is, people will sit and watch a talk show on TV. What's the difference?
Thank you.
What is the difference? It's the same thing. Like, seriously.
Exactly. They watch video podcasts. What the hell is the difference? And if you play the game, it's all the better because you're invested that way and we're talking about the game and stuff. But even if you don't, we have plenty of people who've come off my Twitter as DFS players and fantasy players that just come in and hang out and they don't even have a PS4 to play MLB The Show. So you don't have to be a gamer to get value out of it. If you like baseball, I feel confident that you would enjoy hanging out. So twitch.tv/psport24. I'm not on tonight, so you can't get a triple dose of Paul. But then Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday before I go out to Denver this weekend for my Fangraphs trip.
Cool. So yeah, go check him out on Twitter, Twitch, you know, Sleeper in the Bus Pod, and all the good work at Fangraphs. And yeah, Paul, thanks for joining me, man. Much appreciated.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Everybody, this is Bench with Bubba, episode 101. Catch you guys next time.
Life's better with an auto policy from American Family Insurance. No matter what dreams you're driving towards. That's because our expert agents will make you feel totally protected with the right auto coverage at the right price. You'll also save up to 23% when you bundle auto with home. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.